Chicago Baseball Conversation on the new flagship home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
Good afternoon, live at Guaranteed Rate Field. It is White Sox Weekly, taking up the White Sox pregame a little after 5:30. Game three of the four-game series, the White Sox and the Red Sox. Mark Harmon and Harry Tynewitz with you. Outstanding show today. Lucas Giolito is going to join us in about 10 or so odd minutes. Lucas, if you haven't noticed, has been pitching phenomenally, especially in the second half of the year. We're going to talk to Lucas in a little bit. Darren Jackson's going to be on the show after 4 o'clock to do a little tribute to his guy, Hawk Harrelson, who will be honored tomorrow, Hawk Day, Harry. And then Hawk himself will be with us after 4:30, a three-part extravaganza with Hawk today, as we are going to give the love to the man who deserves it a day before Hawk Day, where he will be, I would assume, emotional tomorrow out there with his family, friends, and you know, teammates, all of it. I'm not exactly sure who all is going to be here.
But it's going to be Louis Tiant and Ted Williams. We're going to have him out here. We're going to bring him out here, and we're going to bring out all my fellow Carmines, Rico Petrocelli. It's going to be great visiting with Hawk, and Jason Benetti is always great with us. DJ is always great with us. Lucas Giolito did not, he should have gotten a W the other night. It's hard to keep the Red Sox off the board, and he froze their bats. And last year in September he was awesome, and he's been very, very good lately. And so has Michael Kopech. So has Carlos Rodon. Rodon's one of the four best pitchers in baseball right now. And before, Lopez has gotten, I think, tired lately. But, he's pitched very well. So there's a lot of reason to believe, with so many other starters that are in the minors waiting to come up here and get their shot.
Carlos Rodon on the mound tonight. He's 5-0 with an ERA under 2.
Is that good?
Pretty good in his last, that's 9 starts now, 1.84 the ERA to be exact. Hasn't lost since back on June the 30th, which that includes, so that would be 2 months now, July and August. The White Sox finishing up August 17-12. It's their
great.
It's their first winning month of the season, their first winning month since April of last year. So they have, and what's most impressive is the way they're wrapping up the month, taking 2 out of 3 from the Yankees on the road. That could have been a sweep. And, hey, they could be up 2 games to none on the Red Sox in this four-gamer after leading 4-0 on Thursday night. Bullpen had some problems late, but still a very good start to the series with the Red Sox.
And Rodon in that game in the Bronx against the Yankees trailed 2-0. He was dynamite on the hill, and he just bared down. He didn't get upset he was losing. He just got tougher. I mean, the guy is just such a competitor. He competes, and then he competes a little more. It's, and with Rodon, with Giolito, these guys, they're really easy to cheer for. Aside from being young and exciting, Rodon's coming back from, this tough injury and these procedures, and Giolito has, a lot of people have said, he's not who we thought he was. And he's, young. He hasn't had a ton of starts. It's really easy to cheer for these guys.
Let's do our week in review, which we are starting off the broadcast with now on White Sox Weekly, as we go back through the week. As we go back to Monday, where the White Sox beat the New York Yankees, nothing better than winning in New York. 6-2 was the final there. Carlos Rodon, 2 hits over 7 innings. That was awesome. And then it was they were trailing 2-0, and the bases were loaded. The White Sox earlier had blown a bases-loaded no-out opportunity, but that didn't happen this time. Yoan Moncada at the plate.
Tanaka's been tough in situations just like this tonight. The pitch to Moncada. Swinging a shot up the middle of the roof for a hit. That's going to get the 2 runs home. A turn at second by Narvaez. This ball's on the warning track. They're going to hold him at third base. Moncada with a 2-run double. We're even at 2 here in the 6th.
And the Sox go on to win 6-2, which was a great start to the series. And, Carlos Rodon solid on the mound on Monday night. So we move on to Tuesday, where James Shields got the start. Shields, though, was, again, you know, he's 5-15, but he's pitched well, way better than that. And, he pitched well again Tuesday night, pitched into the sixth, only gave up two runs. Sox had a 4-2 lead in that one, but, the bullpen didn't have the best night, and the White Sox didn't add on. It all led up to a 4-4 score in the ninth, and Neil Walker at the plate.
It's over 200 from this side. High fly, deep right field. This is going to go for a game-winning home run by the pinch batter, Neil Walker. Oh, brother. Lights up the night here in New York.
Yep, off of Dylan Covey on Tuesday night.
And that's the kind of game that the White Sox have lost all season. But the next time Neil Walker came to the plate, Avi Garcia made a play that, like, he didn't have time to think about it. All he could do was react. And I thought Neil Walker had another home run, but Avi Garcia was just, terrific. And we know Avi can hit. And, the White Sox fielding has taken a lot of shots this year, but, Avi Garcia was terrific to go up and grab that extra home run away from Neil Walker.
Yep. And, Yankees came into Guaranteed Rate Field earlier in the season, swept the White Sox. So to move along to Wednesday, trying to get a series win and establish yourself a little bit against second-best team in baseball record-wise, the New York Yankees, trailing the Boston Red Sox, who have been ridiculous all season long. But New York's had quite a year. So you go into that Wednesday game, you got Ronaldo Lopez on the mound, who pitched very well in that one, as the Yankees only scored one run. But it was a big, big day for Ryan Lamar.
First man up, Lamar with a high drive to right. This has got a chance to go. 4-0 Ryan Lamar, or 4-1, I should say.
Oh, there's no doubt. You talk about a career night in Yankee Stadium. Ryan Lamar is having it. Two doubles and a home run, driving in all the White Sox runs.
Now, I don't know if there's a direct correlation to Ryan Lamar being on White Sox Weekly last week, but I'd like to speculate that that actually gave him the confidence to come out there at Yankee Stadium in a rubber match game and go with two run-scoring doubles plus the leadoff homer against Chad Green in the seventh inning. Harry.
Well, you know, we've had that effect with a couple other people. Carlos Rodon has not lost since he visited with us.
Right.
You know, so, that's...
Right.
Another guy right there that has done well.
Right.
And, I think we had that girl that won Monday at the U.S. Open. She was on with us last week.
Absolutely. Listen, we just want to be a part of the ball club in any way, shape, or form. You're wearing a Jim Parquet jersey today. If you go to my Twitter, you'll see me in my White Sox onesie, which is...
Yeah, let's talk about that.
I think it's a great look. If you come out tonight, you can get yourself a White Sox onesie. I personally tried it on today. Very comfortable, a nice soft fabric. You could really enjoy...
Now, your White Sox onesie did not, it's at home, right? You didn't, like, wrap it back up in the plastic and some unlucky fan is going to get the one that you had on?
No, it's at home. I was admonished by a girlfriend, Chelsea, who was very disappointed that, I had just taken a shower this morning, and then I was getting ready to come over here, and I was like, wait a second, I want to put on my onesie so I can, you know, take a picture and promote the product. And she said, she's like, you're not, has that been washed? As I was ripping it up out of the bag that they will give you today. I said, no, it hasn't been washed. So she was a little repulsed by that. But I jumped right in there.
Really?
The White Sox.
She's your girlfriend and that repulses her?
Well, that's a fair point. But I didn't say she was surprised. She was just repulsed.
They give away some pretty cool stuff here at Guaranteed Rate Field. And tomorrow is no exception. The Hawk nesting dolls. Three Petrushka dolls out of Russia. And it's Hawk as a broadcaster, Hawk as a GM, Hawk as a ball player.
Yeah, you're really into the nesting dolls. I believe you're going to bring that up to Hawk later today about the nesting dolls, aren't you?
It's very unique. Do you remember when the Russians played North America in hockey?
No. I mean, yes, I do, but I don't remember any nesting dolls around that.
Petrushkas.
Okay. Hey, let's get a highlight from Thursday as we continue through the week. White Sox lost to the Red Sox 9-4, but they were leading 4-0. Giolito had a no-hitter into the fifth inning, and he ended up giving up one run as one of his runners that he left out there did come around to score. But it was a great game for him, and Ricky Renteria was pretty pleased.
The 2-2 pitch, line drive, left field, base hit. coming in. Delmonico gets to it, gets it in quickly, and holds the runner at third base.
That's a nice play, and that no-hitter is over, and the fans, they appreciate it, Darren. Listen to him.
It could have gone completely the other direction, but he didn't allow it to. I think that shows a little bit of fortitude, his mental makeup, you know, his heart. He believes that he can do a job, and he's continuing to evolve as a pretty good major league pitcher.
And we're going to hear from Lucas coming up here in about 5 minutes. But one more highlight from the week. That's last night. We had a 2-hour and 9-minute rain delay. But the White Sox sat it out better than the Red Sox and ended up beating them last night 6-1. One of the highlights from last night, outside of Michael Kopech going 3 scoreless innings, which, of course, was the big story. You wanted to see more. Second time he's pitched here. Second time he's had to leave early because of rain. But offensively, Yoan Moncada got the White Sox rolling in the first.
1-2. And the 1-2 with 2 down. Swinging a high fly ball to left. This is tagged. Benintendi at the track. He's at the fence. Gone for a 2-run homer by Moncada. Light it up. Sox lead 3-0 here in the first.
And the other home run last night came off the bat of Matt Davidson, and I was listening to the postgame show as I do every night, every game, and you pointed out that Palka has 19, and now there's 19 taters in the column of a Matt Davidson, 38 bombs. From your two DHs, that is a big number.
It is. You look at that, and I don't know. I think you got to feel pretty good about the production you're getting at that slot from both those guys. And I know they play some outfield, some first base, a little bit of third base, too. But overall,
they're the DH,
and you got 38 homers from the right side and the left side combined. Pretty good. All right, we'll come on back. Lucas Giolito, we just talked to him. He'll be with us right here on White Sox Weekly 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. Hey, head to the ballpark for Dollar Hot Dog Wednesdays. You can take advantage of this unbeatable deal September 5th as the Sox take on the Detroit Tigers. 7:10, your first pitch on the 5th. It's brought to you by Securian Financial, who can help you make every moment count. Find out more at Securian.com for tickets. Visit WhiteSox.com/DollarDogs today. Get yourself out here for a Dollar Dog Wednesday. And you can go upgrade, Harry, to the grill stand and get the $2.50 dog with the grilled onions.
Oh, so good.
So, I mean, two great options right
there. Load that baby up with ketchup. Family Sundays feature tickets as low as $5 in the upper level, $15 in the lower level, and parking for just $10, plus special family-focused activities located throughout the ballpark. Family Sundays are proudly presented by Coca-Cola. Taste the feeling. Visit WhiteSox.com/Sundays to purchase your tickets today.
We'll have the resurgent Lucas Giolito next on White Sox Weekly 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly 720 WGN. Mark Harmon, Harry Tino, it's out there. Look at Tim Anderson and Matt Davidson playing catch in their shorts and T-shirts early on here, getting ready for a ball game night, Harry.
TA7, man.
Very, very strong. Let's bring in Lucas Giolito. And Lucas, you were awesome against the Red Sox on Thursday night. You've really turned around your season. Let's just start with Thursday. What do you credit for how well you pitched that night and sort of your turnaround overall?
I've been pitching a lot better recently, feeling a lot better. Obviously, you always want to be as confident as possible as a starting pitcher, but once you start to have good results and you start to get rolling a little bit, that's when the confidence can really start to take off and get better. So, just been kind of riding that wave and having fun with it. And, for me, when I'm feeling good and I know that I can execute pitches, I don't really worry about the opponent.
So just to paint the picture, you got your guy Ronaldo Lopez over here to your right, and he's smiling at you. And he's now saying hello, and he's on a sweet bike. You guys are so many young pitchers, talented guys, and you can just see that there's support and energy around the club. Like I've said a zillion times this year on the postgame show, you guys don't act like a club that's not going to the World Series right now or going to the playoffs. There's something about what's going on here.
Yeah, especially recently. We've started to pick it up, I'd say, over the past month, really since the All-Star break. Just coming together more as a team. Guys are getting closer. It's always been a pretty close-knit clubhouse. We've always had fun together, but more so recently, we've just been gelling, having a really good time, kind of creating little fun things we do in the clubhouse, fun things we do in the dugout. I'm sure you guys have seen the home run chain and things like that. So we're just having fun with it. And, you know, when you're having fun and you're relaxed, I think that's when you can play your best baseball.
Who gets the most credit for the home run, Shane?
I'm not positive. Maybe T.A. He might have gotten it from a media guy here that I know that someone in the organization got it made. And then it might have been T.A. who brought it down. I'm not positive, though.
I'll do some research on that.
All right, Don Cooper is your pitching coach. He's been here, of course, since the 60s. What has he taught you? What have you learned from Coop?
I've learned a lot from Coop. It's hard to pinpoint one thing. I'd say more recently, just simplifying some things. I remember when we were in Boston, so this is a few months ago, I'd been struggling, and Coop told me, hey, tomorrow we're going to go out in the field and we're going to kind of revamp your long toss routine. I'm like, all right, that's cool. Go out there with Coop and Hass. And it's just step by step. We went out. I was playing catch with Louie, one of our bullpen catchers. And, we were just paying attention to every single throw, moving back, then moving in, putting a little bit more on it as I'm coming in. And we're paying attention to how the ball's coming out, how I'm releasing it. Making little adjustments here or there, and that was kind of the turning point for me this year, just cleaning up the web and playing catch, and it's really helped out a lot. Obviously, Coop and Hass, I give them full credit for that, really, really helping me out in that regard, and so it's kind of translated over the mound. I'm doing a better job of staying in line, commanding the ball better, and then stuff's gotten a little bit better.
So, like, everyone's like, well, what's happened with Lucas? Why is he pitching so much better in the second half of the season? And, I mean, you're a young guy who's getting used to the big leagues. I mean, it's normal that you would get better as you go along here, but is there anything else you would point to other than the warm routine you just described?
I'd say that's the biggest thing that's helped. I'd say just feeling better. I had a little bit of dead arm coming out of spring training, going to April, May, and my arm slot was actually lower than it is now. I don't know if that was just laziness or just bad habits, or my body just wasn't comfortable getting up to where I wanted to be. But over the past couple months, it's just been a lot better. I mean, it's just been more relaxed, throwing from the slot that's comfortable for me, one that I can repeat a lot more, and it's helped. It's been good stuff.
Lucas Giolito for a couple minutes longer with Mark Kerman, Harry Tynowitz on WGN White Sox Weekly. So Carlos Rodon said he'd like to work a little harder on holding the runners closer to first base. What is, like, on your to-do list to get even better than you've become?
Just consistency. I've been pitching much more consistent recently, but it doesn't stop there. For me, it's being able to recognize when I get out of sync and being able to make that adjustment even one pitch later, one batter later, as opposed to I go through a whole outing and something's wrong, and next thing you know I give up four or five runs, I'm out of the game in the fifth inning. That's not doing your job as starting pitcher. For me, it's all about getting deep into the game. That's, sitting next to Wego, talking with him, his career. He's pretty much the, staple of starting pitchers that go deep into the game. And so that's my biggest thing, just building consistency, throwing a ton of strikes, and getting as deep into the game as possible, giving your team a chance to win every single time out.
So your last game against the Red Sox, from my radio seat, I'm saying you're getting guys out with your fastball, you're getting guys out with your curveball, you're getting guys up, down, in, out. I mean, it's not just one thing that's working for you. I would think that's a huge confidence, which is like, this works, that works, my changeup sweet. I mean, all of it.
Yeah. Especially with my changeup, I was trying to throw two different changeups earlier in the year. Bang that. Now I'm just throwing a two-seam changeup, moves more. I can control it better. The more I've been throwing it, the better feel I've gotten for it. Two-seam fastball, been introducing that more. Now I've been working on throwing it front hip to lefties. That's been a little bit of a weapon for me here recently. Just finding ways to get guys out. utilizing my stuff to the best of its ability and finding different ways to get guys out, you know, changing up sequences, especially once you get through the second, third time through the order. There's so many different things you can do to get guys out, and it's kind of like the doors have just opened, and, you know, I'm just learning about it all. So it's a lot of fun.
So you're clearly a smart guy with a lot of thoughts going on up there. How do you use that and then also not let it get in your way where you're thinking too much? Is that something you're working on? I feel like that's been talked about a little bit.
Yeah. I kind of have that label of like being a cerebral guy, thinking a lot.
Because Mark doesn't.
I don't.
Yeah, I think that can be an advantage and a disadvantage. Definitely earlier in the year, it was a disadvantage. Overanalyzing, thinking too much about what I'm doing wrong. Whereas now, I just have the confidence and the trust in myself that I'm going to get the job done. And the only things I'm thinking about are, like I said before, how can I get this guy out? What are the ways I can get this guy out? Whether that be paying attention in the scouting report, remembering tendencies of hitters, things like that, or just thinking about creative ways to sequence up pitches and get guys to swing and miss.
What grade are you giving yourself right now in this year? Do you have a grade? Do you do that type of stuff?
A grade? If I were to grade myself on this year, like right now, it wouldn't be very good. Probably like a D plus maybe, because it's starting to get better. But I can't concern myself too much with what I've done in the past. Obviously, I worked through a lot of things early in the year. Now I'm feeling a lot better. The main goal is harness that and be able to come out of the gate next year throwing like I'm throwing now.
So you're hard on yourself and you have huge expectations for what you can do.
Absolutely. I think that if you don't set high expectations for yourself and you don't kind of expect yourself to succeed, then you're not doing the right thing. I think it's very important to make sure that you're doing everything in your power to succeed and you set high goals.
That's the book of Ditka. Yeah. Coach says you can't achieve your goals unless you set them.
Absolutely.
Seems silly, but there it is right there for you. All right, so whatever you're doing, keep it going, because it's awfully fun to watch you and the rest of the guys right now, and big things are ahead.
Absolutely, yeah. We're really coming together. Obviously, you know, we're kind of starting to trickle some guys in here as part of this big rebuild that everyone's talking about. Kopech's up. Looking forward to seeing Eloy.
Kopech, I haven't heard of him.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what a bunch of the other guys have to offer over the next couple years, too. So I think that we're gonna end up having a really good team here.
Lucas, great to talk to you. Congrats on your success. Keep it rolling.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks, guys.
And that guy is somewhat likable there, Harry. Not a bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to marry him or anything, but I love how much he cares. I appreciate his perspective. And I tell you, all these guys, they just want to keep working at it. They want to keep getting better. And my favorite thing is that he gave himself a D. And maybe we looked at him and he goes, okay, D plus. If he had said C or B, you know, come on. I love it that this season is not acceptable for him.
High performers, they set the bar up high. All right, quick timeout. Let's get you into news. DJ Darren Jackson will talk about Hawk Day coming up after that 4 o'clock news on 720 WGN.
Tell me something good. Tell me. Tell me that you love me. Yeah.
Tell me something good. So I'm talking about White Sox Weekly 408 on a beautiful Saturday. White Sox and the Red Sox tonight coming out to Guaranteed Rate Field. Get your onesie. Darren Jackson, you got your onesie for tonight? You locked and loaded?
You know, somehow, I got to be honest with you, they have missed our booth. We have not received one.
What?
Yeah.
The Fermio DJ booth did not get swag? Come on.
I mean, I don't know what the deal is there, but I'm going to have to search it out now.
I mean, I put mine on. I got it out there on the social media. I look good.
I mean, you can pull it off. I guarantee it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just comfortable.
If he were still on the team, Bartolo Colon, would he need a twosie?
Yes, absolutely. And he'd wear it with honor. There's no question about that.
Hey, about time that you guys go into the Bronx and you win a series.
You know, let's just be realistic. We have been playing better baseball. It doesn't matter who's in front of us. We're playing tighter baseball defensively. The pitching's doing pretty darn well. We've had some hiccups in the bullpen, obviously, but it's kind of fun to watch these guys get better at what they're doing. And if the opponent's the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Tigers, it doesn't really matter right now. If we're playing better, you're going to beat an opponent.
Talking with Darren Jackson, DJ, on White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. Mark Harmon, Harry Tynowitz. We're going to talk to you about Hawk and Hawk Day tomorrow in a second, but we just talked to Lucas Giolito. What do you see in the transformation of Lucas? Because clearly something has happened. And I just thought it was impressive that he's getting guys out of this changeup. He's getting guys out of this fastball. Breaking ball's getting out. He's doing it in a variety of ways.
Well, I'm going to say this. If you've spoken to him, then you got the right answers. Because he's the one that's going to tell you what's going on. But what we see from a distance is just a guy that's settled into being a major league pitcher and more confident with doing it. Helps that his velocity has gone up from earlier in the year where it was 89 to 91. He's throwing 94 consistently now, and that makes a difference. And when you're saying I'm going inside on this guy, he's just throwing more strikes too, a higher percentage of strikes. All these things translate to more success.
He did mention the dead arm earlier in the year that he was kind of fighting it, so that speaks to the velocity.
You know, we visited with Carlos Rodon, and he's like got this intense, I must get better, I must work harder. Giolito's sort of more philosophical. He's got a different perspective. You know, have you been teammates with any pitchers that kind of have that see the big picture thing?
Oh, absolutely. Every pitcher is completely, you know, this different personality-wise. Mm-hmm. Some guys you could talk to before the game and go, hey, what's going on tonight? Nothing. They didn't even act like they were pitching that night. Others, they'd walk in the locker room and they had this blank stare on their face like they were getting ready to go into the foxhole and ready for war. And you're like going, oh, yeah, his day to pitch today. I just realized that when you see the expression. So, I mean, every guy's got that different thought process and approach. And it didn't matter to me. That's the funny thing. My favorite thing to do when I played was to be there for the pitcher. And that's the approach I took. And I loved making a play for these guys if they made a mistake. You know, it's like watching Adam Engel out there or Tim Anderson, who's playing platinum glove shortstop the last month. I mean, these guys are making plays and you realize how much of a difference it makes for those pitchers when the ball's hit and all of a sudden they turn around and say, oh, my guy's got that. That's a great feeling.
Tim Anderson deserves a ton of credit. If you ask people early in the year, hey, is this guy a major league shortstop? You ask scouts around baseball, the answer probably would have been no, but from most. And he has absolutely become one. I guess it's just hard work. I mean, what are we giving credit to there for? I mean, Timmy deserves all of it, right?
Well, not just him. You know, the coaching staff. I mean, they have worked their butts off with him. But, yes, it was questionable to start the year. He made a lot of errors, you know, in the past, and then the season started where, okay, it doesn't look like he's really progressed that much. The difference I saw, and we talked about this earlier, Carm, is this year he started out actually making some backhand plays. I mean, he wouldn't trust that before. He'd round the ball to his right, try and get around it and throw off balance and do all that, and you can't be a successful big league shortstop doing that. They worked on his backhand. He employed it a couple of times. Wasn't the most comfortable thing, but he was doing it. Now he's doing it like he's Omar Vizquel out there with a better arm. You're like, whoa, what's going on out here? So it's been fun to watch.
And it's infectious because how about Neil Walker, who homers Tuesday night to beat you guys, comes back Wednesday, and Avi Garcia goes back and just makes a crazy play to take a home run away.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you do get on the defensive train. Guys want to be the next one to make the spectacular play. Engel's a guy that's obviously set the bar extremely high. But look, Avi Garcia, the funny thing about him, you can go back a couple of years, and he was a guy going up over the right field wall with consistency, taking home runs away from guys. You know, he's been banged up, bad hamstring, knee, all that. So when he makes a play, trust me, he's leaving everything he has out there right now, and he's just trying to get through this year with the pain he's dealing with. But I'm telling you, our guys, I look at Nicky Delmonico, converted infielder. Every time he goes after a ball now, I know he's going to catch it. He may not look like a true natural outfielder, but he's gotten better. All these guys have gotten better from the start of the year to now, and that's what the program has been.
Daniel Polk has gotten better out there. It's still a work in progress, but he has certainly moved forward. All right, let's talk about Hawk Day tomorrow. We're going to talk to him coming up here. I think we're going to see Ken on the field. That's and not Hawk. You see both sides, right? The Hawk and versus Kenny. Like, how would you describe that to people? There's Ken and there's Hawk.
Well, there's definitely two different people. Okay. Ken is probably the most gracious, humble, great father, husband, friend. He does anything for his family. He's there. And, I mean, I'm not kidding. When if you need anything, Ken is there for you. And on the flip side, if you get the Hawk, you've got the most competitive. He's going to beat you down into the ground, and he's going to win the personality that comes out. And I've been fortunate enough to be on both sides of it, which I love. But for me, it's always more been Ken. You know, even though we worked together for 9 years and it was up here as the Hawk, I saw him every in-between pitch as Ken. And every time we played golf together, had lunch or breakfast or dinner, or as with he and his family, because I spent all this time with him, it was Ken. And I'm fortunate enough to know him almost like a family member, and it's been awesome.
You know, a lot of people say, oh, my God, all he does is he drops a Red Sox name and starts to go into an anecdote about it. But I tell you, if you could ever have dinner with the Hawk, I mean, Hawk in long form, you know, is just fantastic, because he's not dropping names. These are the people that he hung out with 6 decades in the sport. You know, I mean, it must have been so much fun to just go out with him, and all of a sudden he's in the middle of a story about, you know, Whitey Ford or, you know, Willie Mays or something like that.
Well, I can go back to, when he was growing up and racing cars on the dirt roads, the back roads, being chased by the police. That's, I mean, the stories that I know about before he was a professional baseball player back in high school, all these things, absolutely. I mean, I know, the history, the background, his successes and his failures and his bet on this or that. And you're right. If you sit down with him and you get away from just the brief little 3-hour broadcast that he can bring you with bringing up the Red Sox and Yaz and his working
Rico
with
Shelley.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he has, there's just so much, and the book that he put out there, still it dips into who he is and what he's done, but there's so much more. I mean, it's a walking, talking motion picture, but it's one that's going to go about 8-9 hours long if you were to get all the true Hawk information into it.
Is there any one broadcast that sticks out where you're in there and you guys are having a momentous White Sox moment, if you will, DJ, and you're just sitting there next to him thinking to myself, this is nobody else would have called it like you just did right now, sir.
Well, there were a few, like right when I became a broadcaster and we got in a big brawl with Detroit. And there was some stuff going on out there, some dirty stuff from Detroit coming in at our players. And I remember Hawk and I both saying, hey, hold the mic, I'm going downstairs. We both wanted to go down there because we saw everything from up here and knew who needed to have a little shot to the back of the head themselves. So that's one that stands out. And the Mark Burley no-hitter, not the perfect game, the no-hitter, where he picked Sammy Sosa off of first base, doing that game with him, too. Those are the two that really kind of jump out.
I hated the Tigers so much on that Saturday. Robert Fick, what a little putt.
Yes.
Just unbelievable. Do you remember what pitcher was on the mound for the Sox that day that started that argument?
Jim Parquet, huh?
You got a great memory, DJ.
Yeah, that's a great jersey you're wearing. You're obviously a big fan.
Why, thank you.
But, Jim Parquet, the little feisty one, I'll tell you, Parkey was a guy that, even though he weighed all of 175 pounds, he was a competitive guy as well. So that was a bad day for the White Sox. There were some clowns out there. Dean Palmer, I believe, might have even there then and doing stupid stuff, and it was bad.
And the next day, the place was packed, and the rains came.
Yeah.
The Sox get so screwed by bad weather, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, and then it all just goes away.
Right.
Yeah. I think we got to mention that Harry, for those who missed it, is actually wearing a Jim Parquet jersey to the park today. It's a little large on you these days because you're so fit nowadays,
Thank
Harry.
Goodness. But I wouldn't say fit. I would say less likely to explode.
That's fair, but
thank you, Louie.
We're going upper level. We're gonna call it fit. All right, Michael Kopech, what are we seeing in your mind here, DJ? I mean, there's nothing not to like, right?
No, absolutely not. And I think the number one thing anytime you try and make an evaluation is we have all these years broadcasting and watching a kid make his debut and then stick around for the couple more outings. He hasn't shown to me one time that he's been nervous out there.
Yeah.
Even if he's had a little hiccup, I haven't looked out there and go, this kid's nervous or he's scared. He is ready to come at you and good luck. And I tell you, that is a beautiful thing to see. I can't wait every time he pitches now because I'm waiting to see. Is there a time where all of a sudden it's going to settle in and he's a little nervous? Because I haven't seen that yet.
You know who loves it when Kopech pitches? Farmers.
Because it's going to rain, especially at home. Absolutely.
DJ, appreciate you. Thanks for jumping on the our Hawk celebration day. We want to get you in here, and of course, fun to talk baseball.
Well, thank you. This was painless. I thought for a while there, you guys were coming at me with a couple of knives and going to stick me, but I feel safe still.
And did you get the two cupcakes? Carm wanted to thank you for everything that you and Fermio did, so we brought you each a cupcake.
Yeah, that's a very kind gesture. We appreciate it.
And a Rice Krispie treat.
And the black white cookie. Yeah, absolutely.
Come on.
I walked in there and went, man. Ed's been here early today. No, it was Carm. Thank you.
Fresh from the Jewish deli. I mean, this is some high-level stuff that I'm bringing in. All right, DJ, good to see you.
Thank you, guys.
White Sox Weekly continue. Of course, you'll DJ on the call tonight, 5:35, your pregame Sox and the Red Sox, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. Thanks again to DJ, Darren Jackson. For joining us here. We'll have Hawk coming up after 4:30. Hey, White Sox fans, you can celebrate Hispanic Heritage Night. It's Friday, September the 7th. That's this coming Friday. It's presented by Cerveza Modelo. There's going to be Latin music and dancing, special activities, an on-field parade as well. You get some post-game fireworks. Modelo Especial. Good guys wear black and choose gold. Tickets start as low as $10 to purchase. You can visit whitesox.com/NHH.
Hey, we do our regular White Sox Weekly text in the text segment, as always, sponsored by CJ Wilson Mazda and ZoomZoomNation.com, where they're always trying to make your car shopping fun. Carm and I were talking about these Rick Hahn deals, you know, that have happened and how they're starting to come to fruition. And, I mean, if you see Moncada homering and, you know, Kopech dealing, you know, you think, hey, you know, maybe we got the better end of that trade. And then you're looking at Giolito, you're thinking, hey, that Eaton trade's pretty good. And Hahn might get arrested. Tons of respect, props to Theo and Jed, but Hahn might get arrested for what he got in the Quintana deal.
Yeah, well, when Eloy Jimenez is in the Hall of Fame in about 20 years, that would be the case. We'll see. I know there's been a ton of conversation about Eloy this week, and some fans are upset that he's not coming up here. Some fans are thrilled that he's not coming up here, so the White Sox will have another year of control. We talked about this some on the rain delay last night. Look, when I know that you want to see him now. I get it. But there's 30 days left in the season. He's going to be here. You're going to get to enjoy him next year. And I think long-term, it's the right play for the White Sox. And
sure.
It's not official, either. Of course, that he's not coming up. Rick Hahn is going to talk with the media on Monday. So, but the most likely is that he's not coming
up. So we have four answers for you on our text question today.
Okay, yeah, what are our four answers again?
Okay, so what's the best trade going on in Chicago right now? Is it the Chris Sale deal?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the Adam Eaton deal?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the Jose Quintana deal?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it Khalil Mack?
To the Bear.
To the Bears. Oh, man, the Bears just... Aaron Rodgers might not sleep for the next few nights.
And a lot of excitement for Bears football with Khalil Mack coming in. All right, hey, let's take a quick timeout. And the text line, by the way, if you'd like to answer that, 312-981-7200. Hawk Harrelson after the 4:30 news on 720 WGN.
Call your sons, call your daughters, call your friends, call your neighbors.
You got to be kidding me.
Way back, he looks up, you can't put it on the ball. Yes! Yes!
720 WGN, it's White Sox Weekly. This is an interview that I want to do, but slash do not want to do. Harry Tynowitz, the great Hawk Harrelson. Ken Harrelson is with us here. A day before Hawk Day. Going to be a Hawk, is it going to be emotional for you tomorrow? I would assume it would be. Presentation on the field, people honoring you, a lot of important people at Guaranteed Rate Fields. It's got to bring a little tear to the eye, I would think.
There is no question about it. It's going to be Kenny out there and not Hawk.
Yeah.
Hawk will be around, and Kenny's very emotional. You know, I've talked about this for years, and it's the truth. People think I'm crazy, and maybe I am. It's like Euchre said. He's an institution there in Chicago, or else if he's not, he should be in one. But I'm going to be emotional. There's no doubt about it.
Hawk, you know.
Too many memories, you know. That's what life's about. Life's about family and memories and relationships, which morph into memories. And, boy, I've got so many memories about my White Sox. It's just unbelievable.
Well, they're doing a documentary on you, Hawk, which everyone's excited to see. I'm excited to see. Harry's excited to see with the White Sox and NBC Sports Chicago.
I believe it's a Hawkumentary.
That's fair. It's a Hawkumentary. We can call it that. No problem. But I saw your wife in one of the previews, Hawk, and she started crying herself talking about, you know, this man that I've been married to for so long, he cares more about his family than anyone I know. And I was just super touched by that. I'm sure, you know, I don't know if you've seen that clip, but you probably have. And just to see your wife talking about you like that, it's got to be super tender.
You know, believe it or not, I have not seen the clip. And this is something Ted Williams got me in the habit of a long time ago when I was playing with the Red Sox. And we're having lunch one day at Jimmy's Harborside there in Boston. And he said, do yourself a favor. He said, back in those days, they didn't have talk shows. You know, he said, do yourself a favor. He says, don't read the newspapers and don't watch TV. And, you know, I got in that habit. And since then, I've never watched myself hit. You know, they didn't have the video equipment back in those days. They had, you know, film, so to speak. I never watched myself hit. I never watched myself on a golf course, swing the golf course, club. I just have never done that. And now when I see something will come up about me on TV, I'll quickly hit the dial and change the channel. And people say, how can you do that? Well, it's easy. I've been doing it for a long, long time, so I'm in the habit of it.
Hawk, the Hawk Harrelson nesting dolls are going to be, you know, on eBay for hundreds of dollars as soon as, like, you know, we get to the second inning. Last year, everybody wanted the Hawk alarm clock. Have you got your Hawk Harrelson nesting dolls yet?
No, Bob Graham and Scott Reifert, my two guys that I love like sons, you know, with the Sox, they've got some put away for me, because those alarm clocks, you guys, Colin and Harry, you wouldn't believe, from all over the country. I mean, you know, from Seattle to Portland. I played in Portland. I still have friends out there, you know, in San Diego. And these people calling me and texting me and emailing me trying to get one of those alarm clocks. And they're still doing it to this day. Unfortunately, you know, they're all gone.
I agree with you. Grimm and Reifert are both awesome. So the nesting dolls, for people that everybody's aware of it, but, you know, there are three dolls, and, you know, these are Russian Petrushka dolls. And, you know, there's a little one of Hawk the ball player. Then there's the one that's larger than that, the mama bear size, which is Hawk the GM. Then there's Hawk the announcer. When you, in the end, which one will you have the fondest memories of, Hawk?
Oh, there's no question about it. It'll be, you know, Hawk the announcer. You know, it's funny, because I don't even think about my playing career that much. And, you know, and I was lucky. I played, you know, in the World Series in 67, the impossible dream here with the Red Sox. We lost in seven games to Bob Gibson and the Cardinals. And, you know, and then I broke my leg a year later. And during that rehab time, because in the last two years I played, you know, I had two pretty good years. I was player of the year in 68 and led the major leagues in RBI, finished, almost won a triple crown except for hemorrhoids. Brett says he was the first guy. He wasn't the first guy to get hemorrhoids. I was. And so it sort of deterred me a little bit, because it's hard to go to the ballpark and hit when you don't get any sleep. But during that rehab time, guys, I just lost interest in playing, and I wanted to go into golf. So I did, and that didn't. I got $225,000 worth of canceled checks to prove I cannot play golf. You know, I had the talent. That was not an issue, but people didn't understand what a terrible temper I had, and that sort of golf. When you go out with 14 clubs and you come back with five or six, that's not very good for you. Or
I didn't know the hemorrhoid story, Hawk. You got derailed by hemorrhoids. That's kind of brutal.
I know it. Hey, try sliding. You know, hit one in the left center field, and you know you got to go for two. And try sliding in the second base, because you know it's going to hurt. Oh. And I'm telling you, then you can't sleep at night. Yeah, Yastrzemski used to have to pick me up in my place. You know, I couldn't even sit on the seat. I had to squat down in the front, and we'd drive to Fenway, you know, and play the game. And it was just it's not a lot of fun. And George, you know, the year he got him, he was going for 400. And there's no question in my mind, after going through that, there's no question in my mind that he would have made it. George would have hit 400 that year, because you just can't play baseball with not getting any sleep. In fact, that's the second killer performance in baseball, is not sleeping. The first is pressure, you know, and that's everything is self-induced.
Hawk, you know, the hemorrhoids, I would imagine that's something you just wouldn't take sitting down.
Oh, Harry, you know what? Now you sound like Petrarch.
By the way, the years with you and Wimpy are great. The years of you and Stoney, you know, fantastic. What condition are the White Sox in with a young Jason Benetti in the booth?
Well, they're in terrific. I'm going to tell you something. I want to talk about this in my speech, my swan song, so to speak. I told Jason, you know, sit back, relax, and strap it down, because you're in for a great ride. You know, he's a wonderful young man. He's a wonderful person, and he's a wonderful announcer. And the fans are going to love him here. I'm telling you, he's going to be here a long, long time. And I just couldn't wish him anything but the best.
You know, they say, Hawk, in talk radio, like, a partnership can only last for 8, 9, 10 years. I mean, Harry, you had a long run with Mac Yurko and Harry, and then it comes to an end. And Hawk, and you mentioned Wimpy, and then DJ and Stoney. Do you think there's something to be said for that in a broadcast booth, Hawk, that, you know, you can go for 10 years and then it's time for a change?
Yeah, there's something to be said for that. Not in every case, but in certain cases, certainly. I know Drysdale, God rest his soul, if Don hadn't died, we'd have been together for years and years and years, because there are a lot of people who thought that, you know, that Don and myself were the best team ever. In fact, some of the national announcers, you know, national people wanted us to come do some national games, and I didn't want to do it, because, you know, you got a producer in each ear, and they're fighting, you know, to get their fingerprint on the telecast. And Don hated that. Don, to me, I got to tell you this. Don, you know, Vince Scully is terrific. There's no question. And, you know, Ernie Harwell, those guys are two of the greatest that, you know, that ever lived. But I want to say, for me, the greatest baseball announcer that I ever heard was Don Drysdale. And he knew the game. He knew all aspects of the game. You know, he's the smartest guy ever to talk about pitching. And he could dissect it, you know, he can cut and slice it and dice it. And he knew how to hit, because he was a terrific hitter as well. I think he had, what, 7 or 8 home runs one year. And they used to pinch it with him. So he knew the complete game. And then, you know, the funny thing about it is that every time we'd go out, this was before he met Annie, his wife. Annie turned his life around, because when Don and I first were working together, Don, you know, he was, when he had a few cocktails, he was a little ornery. And we'd be on the road, and I'd have to walk him back to his room. You know, he looked like John Wayne. He'd bounce off this wall, bounce off that wall. And then he met Annie. And besides that, he was a huge smoker. But when he met Annie, Annie Myers turned his life around. And he stopped drinking. He stopped smoking. And I'm telling you what. And then we'd get on the road, and he'd say, you know, Hawk, he said, dadgummit, he said, I don't want to die in a hotel room. I've got my wife now, some kids, and he said, I just don't want to. And sure enough, you know, he died in a hotel room in Montreal. And that was the toughest thing I've ever had to say over the air. When Jack Gould came in and told me that Don had passed away, I can't tell you how, to this day, I miss that big guy, I'm telling you. He was a wonderful person. He was a symbol of pitching. Koufax was a better pitcher. Koufax, you know, for 7 years, probably was the greatest pitcher, maybe the greatest pitcher ever lived. But Don was a symbol, because Don was a guy, you know, he was a mean guy. He still holds the record for most hit batsmen. He protected his hitters. He was a leader on that ball club. And he was just the symbol, and that's how everybody viewed him. And I know I faced him in spring training a few times, and I faced him in the All-Star game. And he had that, what he called his Cuban forkball, which was, you know, a little slippery elm involved in that as well. And when I faced him, the first pitch he threw me, he didn't throw those in spring training, but the first pitch he threw me in that All-Star game in Houston, I'd never seen anything like that. So I backed out of the box. Now here comes another one. Same thing, and I backed out of the box, and Don started laughing. He had to put his glove over his face and turn around and face center field, because he knew I'd never seen anything like that. And he was just fun to play against. And Mantle framed him the best. Mickey, they were playing in the World Series, getting ready to play in the World Series one year, and the writers asked Mickey, he says, how are you going to go against, how do you try to hit Drysdale? He said, well, sick of hitting Drysdale, hit him before he hits you.
We'll continue with our guy, Hawk Harrelson, coming up after a brief timeout as it's a three-part extravaganza with Hawk Day tomorrow. Some great stuff with Don Drysdale right there. Harry, you got a message for everybody, though?
Yeah, I want you guys to remember, you can take your family of four to one more White Sox game this season with the Family Four-Pack. Now, look, the Family Four-Pack lets you receive four tickets, four hot dogs, four chips, and four sodas for as low as $49. Upper and lower level packages available. Purchase yours at whitesox.com/four-packs today.
More with Hawk Harrelson coming up. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly continuing. Mark Carmen, Harry Tynowitz out of the ballpark as the gates are open. Fans coming in. Harry, what's your favorite thing when you look back and think about number 35, Frank Thomas?
Well, he's by far the greatest hitter in the history of the White Sox organization. My favorite thing, though, was the excitement level you'd get when he would stride to the plate because it was the greatest Gene Honda name. 35, Frank Thomas! The greatest Gene Honda name.
I was not expecting that. That was really powerful and potent. And Gene Honda getting love, deserved love. All right, let's bring Hawk back in here and ask Hawk about number 35 and what he remembers most, what he loved most about the Big Hurt.
He's one of the greatest hitters that ever lived. You know, he's put up some numbers that, let me see, there's only four other guys that put up numbers, and I forget all the categories, you know, home runs, batting average, RBIs, walks, runs scored, and all that stuff. Mel Ott, Lou Gehrig, Ted Williams, and Babe Ruth. Those are the only four guys that can approach those numbers. And all those guys were left-handed hitters. And back in those days, you know, baseball was dominated by right-handed pitching. Mm-hmm. And the Big Hurt, you know, he did things his first 7 years. He was the best right-handed hitter I ever saw. And I played against some good guys. I played against some great hitters, left-handed and right. I played against, you know, Musial, Mays, and I never played against Ted Williams, but I saw enough films of him, and I talked 100 hours, 200 hours with him about hitting. And Frank, the Big Hurt was one of the greatest. And besides that, I'll tell you what, he's the most asked-about White Sox player that I get. You know, even during the winter down at Bay Hill, we live in my home in Orlando, and people come down there, they see my golf bag, they'll come over and want to talk some baseball. They'll see me on the practice range, come over, talk some baseball. And they all ask about the Big Hurt. And you know the first thing I tell them? I said, I love that guy. I love that guy like a son because he played hurt. And a lot of times he was really hurting, and he had never let the media know about it. He didn't want any excuses. And, you know, he played. He was clean, the whole thing. And as I said, he put numbers up. And when I first knew that he had a chance, I saw his first hit of triple in Milwaukee at County Stadium. And then I watched him. Because he could run for a big man, you know, he was not a slow guy, with 265 pounds, and the only thing Frank couldn't do on a baseball field was throw. You know, he never learned the art of throwing, but he did things out there, and he was such one of my biggest disappointments was in 05 when he didn't get a chance to play in the World Series, because I'll tell you why he was. Greatest, by far, the greatest hitter in White Sox franchise history and one of the greatest impactful people.
Hawk, he's also probably your best nickname, the Big Hurt. You gave that to him. Carm and I were out there when they were celebrating the the squad that didn't get to win the World Series because of the strike, but we were talking to the guys, and there's Lance Johnson, the One Dog, Warren Newsom, the Deacon. Who are some of the nicknames that you really enjoy the fact that your nickname is how the guy was labeled for the rest of his career?
Well, Black Jack McDowell, you know, and I had players come to me and ask me, said, Hawk, I remember Ellis Burks came to me one day and said, Hawk, give me a nickname. I said, well, Ellis, you got to do something that'll cause me to give you a nickname. I just can't sit down and think of a nickname. And back in my day, that was common. Everybody had a nickname, and if they didn't, you called them by their number. K-Line was Line, okay? But if you didn't call him that, you called him Six. And to this day, if Al walked in my front door right now, he walked in, I'd say, Six, what are you doing here? Now, that was just, nicknames were common, and a lot of them you can't mention over the air, you know, but everybody had a nickname, and that was part of the parlance, so to speak. That was part of the camaraderie. You know, these kids today, I got to tell you, these kids today, I was just a tick better than an average player.
Come on.
These kids today, I want to tell you something, are in my category, they're much better than we were. Now, our superstars, you know, the Williams, the Mantles, the Mays, the Musials, and those guys, they'd have been stars today. They'd have been stars 100 years from now. But overall, these kids today coming up, that's one of my big joys, is watching young talent. And I want to tell you something. Starting in 2020, we're going to see some of the greatest young talent in White Sox history. And it's going to be a fun thing to watch. It really is. This club is just, Kenny and Rick have done such a great job. It's actually almost unbelievable. And it's one of those things, you had to see to believe it. Well, you saw it, I saw it, and we're all seeing it. And you watch, 2020 is going to be maybe the best decade of White Sox baseball in their history, and maybe the best decade of baseball in Chicago history.
Huck, what do you think of how the game is being played, though, right now? I was talking with Bill Melton in the dugout on the last homestand, and you know, and a lot of guys who don't like the shifting and everybody in launch angles, and there's no hit and runs and less steals, and there's not as many balls in play. Do you find the game more boring to watch right now, or do you find the same level of enthusiasm as you've always had?
No, I don't find it boring at all because of the talent. Now, what they're doing is the name of the game is talent evaluation, okay? It always has been and always will be. It's not analytics. It's not sabermetrics. It's talent evaluation. And the heart and soul of baseball always has been, always will be, of scouts. Because those computers, don't get me wrong, there's a place for numbers in baseball. I like some of these numbers they're coming out with. You know, I'd love to have faced, you know, Whitey Ford and some of these, you know, Bob Gibbons and all those guys and Koufax and Drysdale. Knowing that in certain situations, you know, they threw like a slider, you know, 75% of the time. I would have loved to have had that kind of information, but we didn't. But the thing is that what I don't like about some of the things in baseball right now is that they're taking away a lot of these guys who are managing today. They're taking away a game that these guys are not familiar with, these managers, because that's not the way they came up. You know, I said this when it happened. DJ and I were doing a game in Toronto when sabermetrics was coming out, and I told DJ in that game, I'll never forget it. I said, DJ, I said, this is going to get a lot of baseball people fired. And indeed, it has. There's no question about that. Because when you got guys sending down proposed lineups for a manager for that particular, the only way you can jump, they can't quantify what's in a guy's heart and what's in his gut. How big a stones has he got? They can't quantify that. And that's, and these kids, they are inundated with numbers, you know, and launch angles and all this other stuff, and swing angles. And the thing is, I remember Gordon Beckham. Remember when Gordon first came up?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Huge.
Great hair.
You know, he came up and looked like there for the first year and a half, looked like he was going to be a perennial all-star, didn't it? I mean, he was going out there, and then 2 years later, we're finishing up in Minnesota, the last game of the season, and I'm walking out to get on the bus, and Gordon's locker was right near the door. So he grabbed me by the arm, and he looked at me, and he said, Hawk, he said, what's wrong? And I looked at him, and I said, Gordon, you've lost the biggest quality and the biggest trait that you had. And he said, what's that? I said, you've lost your childlike instincts. I said, remember a couple of years ago when you joined us out of Georgia, and you were just coming up here, you were having fun, you were hitting the ball, you know, over the fence in right field, off the wall in right field, left field, making all the plays. He was one of the best defensive players we've ever had in the White Sox uniform. I said, but you've lost that because you got so wrapped up in mechanics. And mechanics is a killer. Approach is a winner.
Hawk Harrelson joining us here on White Sox Weekly. It's a three-part interview, so stick around. We'll be talking to him right after 5 o'clock. The great Hawk Harrelson. Harry, I know you got a big smile on your face there to listen to Hawk talk. So we'll do that right after the 5 o'clock news, 720 WGN.
Look at the play by Burley. Mercy! You got to be facing me. What are you doing, Wagner?
You can put it on the board. Yes! Who wants to bunt?
It is Hawk.
Hawk Day tomorrow, Guaranteed Rate Field. Come on out and be here for the ceremony. Hawk going to be honored before the game tomorrow. And, of course, A.J. Pierzynski will join Hawk in the booth for tomorrow afternoon's game with the Boston Red Sox. Mark Harmon and Harry Tynowitz back with you on White Sox Weekly until 5:30. Andy Mazur has your White Sox pregame show right after that. Ed and DJ with the first pitch a little bit after 6:10 tonight. Harry, what do you got?
Sox fans, join us as the White Sox take on the Los Angeles Angels on Sunday, September 9th at 1:10 p.m. The first 15,000 fans receive a free White Sox water bottle presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Bring your business home to Bedford Park and win big. Purchase your tickets today by visiting WhiteSox.com or calling 866-SOX-GAME.
Little Mike Trout at the ballpark next weekend. I know some of my friends, or one of them in particular, was texting me last night. He's his son and never seen Trout. He's coming out to the game next weekend to see one of the best in baseball. And Sox fans, so don't forget where you are. Halfway to St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, yeah.
That is September.
Saturday.
That's September the 8th, also against those Angels. 6:10, your first pitch. The first 10,000 fans, ages 21 and over, will receive a White Sox snapback hat. It's a sweet look. It's presented by Goose Island Beer Company, Goose Island Chicago's beer. Purchase those tickets by visiting WhiteSox.com or calling 866-SOX-GAME.
I wonder if they'll have corned beef and cabbage that day.
You can definitely get yourself some halfway to St. Paddy's Day food at the ballpark that day.
I hope my green Sox jersey autographed by the great Minnie Minoso fits. I'll wear it Saturday.
Yes, parquet today, green Minnie Minoso next Saturday. Who knows what will be in the future for you. You're an amazing man. Let's bring Hawk Harrelson back in here. And he was just talking about numbers and scouts and how you identify talent being the key to still the game today. And, yes, numbers are valuable, but, of course, Hawks always believe it's not everything. But he waxes poetic, if you will, right now about how you get a guy to learn at the big league level, how you can improve a hitter. So here's Hawk talking about getting guys to the next level at the plate.
In the big leagues, you just don't teach guys to try to hit, because all these guys who sign, especially high draft choices, they can hit, or you wouldn't have signed them, you know. And what happens is that they got to understand, though, that facing major league pitching is a little different than the pitching they face to get to be signed or in the minor leagues. And Ted Williams told me this. He said, Hawk, a lot of times you're going to go to that plate, and you're going to step in that batter's box, and you're going to be facing the guy 60 feet, 6 inches away, who that night's going to be better than you are, and you've got to understand that. Because you can never realize your potential unless you understand how to take an 0-for-4. And as I was mentioning, what am I going to do against Corey Kluber's slider and his curveball? What am I going to do with Arrieta's slider and his curveball? Nothing. I've just got to figure out a way to try to how, when I get in that box, to be dangerous and try to make them throw me a fastball. And if they throw it and I get it and I pop it up and ground it out, then shame on me. But if I'm going pretty good and they throw me that fastball, chances are I'm going to hit it pretty hard. And that's the difference. If you've got guys standing up there at that plate and their thoughts are behind from the plate back, that's mechanics. Your thoughts have got to be, as Ted said, your thoughts have got to be from the plate forward. That's approach. Behind the plate are problems. In front of the plate are solutions. How do you fix problems? You fix problems with solutions. And if you're thinking about something behind the plate, you're in trouble. So that is what has to be done at the major league level, because these pitchers today, you know, they're pretty damn good. That's the reason some of these guys making $20-30 million a year. You know, you take some of these guys, I'm telling you, you got to understand that you go there, a lot of times they're going to beat you. You're going to go 0-for-4. There's just no doubt about it. But it's such a wonderful game, because, you know, nobody knows this game. There are a lot of people who've been around it longer than others, and they have maybe a little better understanding of the game. But as far as knowing the game, I'll tell you what, if I had to pick one guy in all my career, of all the players, thousands of players I've seen, thousands of players I've played with, managers, hundreds and hundreds of them I've talked to, if there's one guy that I would say that knows more about it than anybody I've ever heard, is A.J. Pierzynski. He's amazing. His thought process, he sees baseball in a different way than we see it. He sees things we don't see. And he's been an amazing guy. You know, he's got a chance to go to the Hall of Fame because some of the catching records that he has.
He is
you know, he was one of the few guys ever aced his SATs.
Is that right? He got a 1600 on his SATs?
He's one of the few guys that ever did it.
Wow.
Wow. Carm went to the University of Iowa. If you can count to 1600, they don't let you in.
It's not nice, Harry.
AJ made two of the most brilliant plays ever in the middle of the game. The drop third strike that nobody thought was a drop third strike with poor Josh Paul behind the dish.
Josh Paul, yeah. Josh Paul.
And then Hawkey had
AJ's
it.
Harry, you got it right on the money. AJ's the only guy in baseball that would have done what he did.
Right. And Hawk, do you remember the play? You were calling it, but against Tampa Bay. He was in a rundown. They had him dead to rights, and he somehow got out of the rundown. He outsmarted like both infielders on it. Brilliant in-game. One of the most recognizable voices in the country, Hawk Harrelson, for a couple more minutes on White Sox Weekly. He's at the Carm. I'm Hey Tweet Harry. Hawk tomorrow will be immortalized, and the Hawk nesting doll will be given out. So get here early, Sox fans. All right, so you're talking about great pitchers. I believe we are seeing some great pitchers right now. So Lopez is kind of like slowed down. He pitched a lot of innings. He was very good early. But I'll tell you something. Giolito was great again this week. And Michael Kopech looks like he's the real deal. And Carlos Rodon is a monster.
Rodon's the ace of the staff. Rodon is – he's not afraid. You know, that's – Harry, your memory is – phenomenal. Yours and Carmen's both, you know, but I got to tell you this. The first thing I look for in a pitcher is, are they afraid of the bat? Because that's when you get your 1-0, 2-0, 2-1, 3-1, 3-2. Those guys are going to get beat. It's just that simple. Carlos Rodon doesn't care who. He's like Maddox. He's like a bulldog. He doesn't care who's got a bat. He don't care who's standing in that box. He's coming right at you. He's going to do what he can do. He's not going to try to do what you can't do. He's going to do what he can do. And there's a huge difference in that philosophy. There's a huge difference in that approach. Carlos Rodon is absolutely, I really believe, he's going to be our next 20-game winner.
By the way, another great Hawk nickname, the Little Bulldog, Greg Hibbert.
There you go again.
Just saying.
You're ringing a lot of bells in my mind, Larry.
I didn't think the Little Bulldog was coming up to that solid. Hey, Hawk, as we wrap up here, just a couple more. You know, the Sox obviously started super slow this year, and everybody knew it was going to be a rebuild. But we're talking over the last 40 games, they're playing over 500 ball. Harry just went through the staff, which I think everyone's excited about. Carlos is looking like he's going to be a number one guy. So is this, in your mind, the start of the turn of what's coming?
It's a new era. A new era. There's no question about it in my mind. Besides Kopech, I mean, we got Hanson down there. You know, we got Dylan Cease. We got some guys down there with tremendous talent. And it just so happens that, you know, Kirk Champion is a minor league hitting instructor, and we got maybe the greatest pitching coach in baseball on our club right now in Don Cooper. I mean, what he's done over his career has just been phenomenal. And you know, I'll tell you what, it's the start of a new era. And I can't wait. I can't wait to see it.
Before you go, I want to talk about something that you brought up at the very start of the interview, Hawk, which was interesting to me because I'm a jealous guy. I'm jealous of people that are calling Major League Baseball games like you have. I'm jealous of, you know, dudes that make a lot of money or whatever. But, like, my biggest jealousy is I would love to have played. To have played Major League Baseball, to play in the NBA, whatever, to play professional golf, professional tennis, I think that would have been the greatest thing, the most fun that I could have ever had doing anything. And yet you said at the start of the interview that you preferred being a broadcaster, and you won, you know, your five-time Emmy Award winner, all that type of stuff. But can you just, was it the connection with the fans broadcasting that puts it ahead? Or because there's no way, in my mind, that you could enjoy calling the game rather than playing the game. So I'm kind of wondering why you say that.
Well, I told you before one time, I told you a couple times, you're the best announcer that's not doing play-by-play, you know, that I know of. And the thing is that I just love the game. I mean, baseball was my worst sport when I was coming up. My best sport was basketball, and next best sport was football. I could have gone anywhere I wanted to for football as a quarterback and basketball. I was an All-American basketball player. And my mom wanted me to play baseball. And I got a big bonus to sign to play baseball, and that's the reason I did it. And since that time, I have grown to absolutely adore this game because it's fascinating to me. I see things once a week, once every 2 weeks, once every 3 weeks I've never seen before. And I've had the honor of calling some of the best moments of my life. You know, calling, you know, Burley's perfect game, you know, call your sons, call your daughters, call your friends, call your neighbors.
That was awesome.
He's got a perfect game going to the ninth inning. And I get letters to this day, guys, from people who say thank you so much because we did call our sons, we did call our daughters, we did call our friends. So, and we saw that last inning. And Tommy's 500th home run. But the one of the best calls I ever saw, you know, made, so to speak, was in Detroit. When Paul Konerko comes to the plate, he's got 299 home runs. He hits the home run for his 300th. Jermaine Dye is the next hitter. He comes to the plate. He's got 299 home runs. He hits a home run. Back-to-back hitters hit their 300th home runs. I don't think you'll ever see that again in the history of baseball.
It was phenomenal, and more than any other sport, you know, you can say, well, football is king now. People watch that more than they watch anything else, but I think numbers are appreciated in baseball more than any other sport. Hawk, my last question for you is, you know, you mentioned the back-to-back Konerko and Dye. Since you were behind the microphone for the White Sox, I've got so many great memories. Some are individual plays, like Fisk tagging two guys out at Yankee Stadium on the same play. Also yelling at Dion about not being professional. Dwayne Weiss's catch. But the greatest thing I ever saw was for the White Sox was El Duque, you know, coming out of the bullpen at Fenway with nobody out and the bases were drunk. And it felt like if Boston scored once, they were going to score 15 times, and he got out of that. So my question for you, my query, what is the greatest thing you ever saw the White Sox do on the field when you were behind the microphone?
Well, go 11-1 in postseason play and win a world championship, first one in 88 years. But that you just rung another bell, Harry, because I was sitting at home with my wife, Eris. We were watching that game when the bases were loaded in Boston, and he was going to bring in El Duque, and I'm saying, don't do it. Don't bring him in. Don't do it. El Duque comes in. You know, he gets the first two outs, and then he gets Johnny Damon 3-2, and I told Eris, I said, honey, if he throws him breaking ball in the dirt, Johnny cannot lay off of it. And sure enough, there it was. El Duque is one of the toughest competitors I've ever seen in this game. And what a great guy he was. I'm telling you, that was one of my most, but the most memorable call from my White Sox, okay, was Mark Burley's perfect game. You know, I called, I think, 11 or 12 no-hitters in my life, two perfect games. But you had to know Mark Burley, because when he pitched that, after he pitched that perfect game, you know, I got my 100-mile drive down to Granger, Indiana, and I got to tell you this, I cried half the way, or maybe even more than half the way. I still get teared up right now when I think about it because of who Mark Burley. Mark Burley is one of the greatest people, one of the greatest teammates that I've ever seen a club could have. He reminds me so much of my greatest teammate was Catfish Hunter. They had bookends. One was right-handed, one was left-handed. Neither one of them could block your eye if they hit you with a fastball. Meanwhile, Catfish is in the Hall of Fame, and Burley's got a chance to go in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Hawk, you're the greatest.
Man, I cry when I think how long you had to drive in and then back for each game.
you love it, Hawk, right? You make some phone calls, you talk to your guys, you think about baseball, you think about family. It didn't bother you. You did it for so long.
Well, if I didn't like it, I wouldn't have done it.
Right.
Well, Hawk, tomorrow is going to be a very special time, and you deserve it. Have an awesome Sunday afternoon. And I can't help thinking, you know, Jay Leno said goodbye to everybody, and then he came back, Hawk. Any chance that window opens up and you're...
Stop it, Harry. Stop it.
Well...
You guys, I tell you what, I love you guys. Hey, anytime. Just give me a buzz.
Well, you're sticking around. You're going to be the ambassador next year, so we're going to be bothering you regardless, Hawk. And, hey, we really, really, really appreciate the time. It was a privilege for us to get to talk to you today, so thank you so much.
You got it.
Hawk Harrelson with us on White Sox Weekly. A three-parter, Harry. Always great to...
A trilogy.
Yeah, I mean, it's historic, and it'll. If you missed any of it, you can check out the podcast at WGNRadio.com. We got one more segment to go to get you ready for the White Sox and the Red Sox tonight. Andy Mazur's got the pregame show at 5:35.
And yes, he's going to join us in the next segment.
Is he really? Do we have proper setup for that? Is that going on?
Yeah, Andy and I are going to share this headset.
Okay. We'll see how that works. 720 WGN. Andy Mazur has your White Sox pregame show coming up at the bottom of the hour. We're going to do a brief moment with Mazur. I'm going to call it a moment.
That's sponsorable.
Moment with Mazur in a second. But first, Harry.
Enjoy your summer nights at the park with Bleachers and Brews. Get one bleacher seat, two beers for just $22 to select upcoming games. You must be 21 and over with a valid ID. Bleachers and Brews is presented by Budweiser. To purchase tickets, visit WhiteSox.com/brews.
And hey, Sox fans, it's backed by popular demand. The Chicago White Sox are offering a limited edition cancer ribbon White Sox cap. It's for only $25. $10 from every cap sold will support White Sox charities and Rush University Medical Center in cancer research. Caps are available online and at the ballpark. Visit WhiteSox.com/rushcap to purchase yours today. We did a text question earlier, which was, what is the greatest trade in White Sox history? The Lucas Giolito for Dane Dunning and... I'm losing my mind right now.
The
Ronaldo Lopez. Or the Dylan Cease and Eloy Jimenez, Jose Quintana. Or we had the Khalil Mack Chicago Bears trade. They've just added on with signing Khalil Mack to a ridiculously long deal. Congratulations,
and of
Bears.
Of course, the Chris Sale trade.
And the Chris Sale trade as well with Michael Kopech, Yoan Moncada. Mazur moment.
I've gone back and forth on this, and Harry, I'm switching for what I told you.
Really?
I'm going Adam Eaton trade. Because you're looking at two-fifths of the rotation now set. And maybe three-fifths with Dane Dunning.
Great show today. Great moment with Mazur. He's got his pregame coming up right after the 5:30 news. Harry, good to be with you.
Great to be with you. Thanks to Dan Long.
And thanks to Hawk Harrelson for joining us. Thanks to Lucas Giolito. Thanks to DJ Darren Jackson. Mazur with the pregame up next, 720 WGN.